Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joe, did you say Rutgers was in New York City? Twitch is clowning on you a little bit.
I don't know if I did or not.
To Piscataway, New Jersey. Been there. A lot of fun.
No, it's not.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. Being very sarcastic. Yeah, no. You couldn't see the sarcasm in my voice.
I've had to do a lot of trips to New Jersey that weren't great.
Why? Why have you gone to New Jersey?
NBA Entertainment headquarters is in New Jersey.
Oh, really?
Secaucus. Beautiful downtown Secaucus.
Where is Secaucus?
On the other side of the river from New York.
So it's pretty close?
Close to, what is the home of Little League Baseball? Hoboken?
Who are you calling a hobo?
Hoboken.
I've never heard of Hoboken. That's the
Hoboken,
that's,
New Jersey, I believe.
I thought Williamsport, Pennsylvania was the home of Little League Baseball.
They have a statue and a whole bunch of things about the fact that Hoboken, New Jersey, I believe, is the starting point of Little League Baseball.
Well, I trust you over me in Little League Baseball. 713-780-ESPN. Before we get to the Steichen is a cult, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Lamont, you're in the hive of the Killer Bees. What's up, Lamont?
Hey, Pac-Man, Joel, Hoboken is also, I used to say that, is also known for Frank Sinatra.
Yes, it is.
That's where he's from.
Yep, I think they got a statue of him, too.
I would hope.
Yeah, I got 2 points to make. My sports wish, I already texted it in, you guys didn't get to it, but I want officials to be held accountable. And I'm not talking about the Super Bowl or anything like that would happen. I just don't think that it makes much sense that players have to go speak to the media, coaches, GMs. But meanwhile, officials don't. I know people disagree with it, but I think that they should be held accountable to the media just like everyone else that's out there on that field or the court or whatever. The last thing, I think, okay, no matter what, I think if you're winning, you're going to have packed houses no matter what for the most part in pro sports. But I think in big cities like Houston, what the main problem is, and I don't hear people talking about this, is traffic, man. I mean, if you go look at Joel's team, the Packers, MetLife. You go look at Dallas. They wait out in Arlington. Houston is like right here in the middle. And it don't feel good battling through 2 hours of traffic just to go see some suck. Now if they take out in Katy somewhere or the Woodlands, you know, maybe I would do something like that. But I think that. I think that traffic plays a lot into what people are willing to go put up with for 3 hours. Well, almost a 7-hour day because you're there in the morning time all the way into the afternoon. And I think that Astroworld's fate was also sealed by that because Astroworld was one of the only amusement parks that was like right in the middle of the city. It needs to be on the outskirts of the city. That's all I have, fellas.
Appreciate it, Lamont. First of all, I love his point on officials because as we see more and more calls that are controversial, and obviously we're coming off one that was somewhat controversial to some people in the Super Bowl. You need to have accountability. The one thing that everybody goes to is the final 2 minutes that comes out the next day after NBA games. Well, if there's no ramifications for it, then people also criticize and say, then what are we doing? Admitting that they blew a call, but you don't get to make up the game from that point or say things. But I think from a peace of mind standpoint, people would like to know that the conversation was had, the review was made, and they can say they got it right or they got it wrong. There was a big controversial call in college basketball this weekend, Duke, Virginia, about when a call was made and if it was the right call or not. So I like the fact that there needs to – I hate the fact that for years you'd have a call that was big and controversial, and then the officials are not talking, and they don't talk to the media, or they had that out. Just to say – he makes a great point. The same way a guy's got to admit, like Bradbury saying, yeah, I held him, and he's got to be accountable with microphones in front of him. I'd like to have the officials that made the call be available.
I understand this and respect it. you're not going to get what you want whenever you have officials that go to the podium. Like, everybody wants to be able to grill the officials, and fans want to be able to hear what an official has to say, like in a podium press conference setting. You'd be deeply disappointed with what you got in that outcome, because they would, like, let's just use...
They'd Brady it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, they would just no answer it, and they would be like, well, in our judgment, like, you would be completely disappointed. Like, what you're wishing for just would not happen. Just take the Super Bowl for example. Like, they meet with a pool reporter. It's not in front of a camera. It's not, you know, all of the media, which Lamont's asking for. And again, I understand and respect it, but they're just going to say, well, yeah, he held them. Okay, cool. That's what you get. Or in our judgment, we thought he stepped out of bounds. In our judgment, based on the rule, it was not a catch. And these officials already talk like this towards coaches. Like, you would be so deeply disappointed by the response that you got from officials. Where I think you can hold them accountable, though, and look, I'm pro officials. I think it's an incredibly difficult job in each and every sport. And I think what you, and I see that, I see all officials at college levels too. What you see in the NFL, what you see in the NBA, what you see in Major League Baseball, they are the best in the world at what they do. Sure, there are some exceptions. Angel Hernandez, you know, Joe West in the past. There's always a couple of exceptions.
What's your boy in college basketball? TV Teddy.
TV. I love TV Teddy. Smells great. Uses lotion all the time. I do. He comes over and talks to me. He does. And I asked another official. I asked Tony Green this, another official. I was like, why does TV Teddy always smell so good? He said he bathes in lotion. And I believe it. He smells like he bathes in lotion.
There's no chafing and there's no ashiness.
Yeah, TV Teddy's great. I love TV Teddy. He comes to talk to me every game that he does. I love TV Teddy. But the NBA officials across the board, better than college officials. NFL officials across the board, better than college officials. Major League Baseball umpires, compared to college officials, way better. Way better. So, like, when Goodell said the other day, our game's never been officiated better, he's right. He's right. It has never been. So it was better 5 years ago? No.
No.
It's better now. It's not. Saying, no one's ever going to be happy with it. But that's not what he said.
No, but I'm saying, if you just take season by season, right, they've had more consistent seasons, I think, than this year. There's been a lot of games with a lot of calls.
What year?
I mean, look, I can't just.
That's what I'm saying. Like maybe there's been some years where it's slightly better, but it's way better than it was 10 years ago. It's way better than it was 20 years ago.
It's a no-win situation, no matter what which sport you're officiating, because whenever there's anything that rubs a fan base or a team or a play the wrong way, you're gonna 50% of it, you're gonna love you, and 50% are gonna hate you. And in most cases, the common fan is just gonna look to hate you. So, I mean, there's bloggers that named Ben that would be there right there in front of center.
Yes.
But at the same time, when you look at it overall as a whole, you just want what we always want, which is to get the call right. That's why the one thing that I think makes this better, and it maybe takes Lamont's point.
I don't even think they want that, Joel. I think that they want a call that's going to enhance their TV pleasure. Like the Bradbury call the other day. Was
that
a holding? Yes, but a lot of people felt like they were robbed of a great ending. They want to be entertained, and they felt that they should have no-called that because it spoiled the ending to a great game.
But here's what I would say. The same way we've got a Mike Pereira in the booth, right, and we've got every network has their analyst that used to be an official in the booth. The main thing is, like with the NBA and replay, now the big thing is, then you have to save your challenge like you do in the NFL, but there's so many more calls that need to be challenged just to get the call right. That especially what they used to do in the final 2 minutes, I saw it happen again last night. It's the way it should be done. If it's truly to get the outcome so that the players decide the game, then just like the Super Bowl, have the official in the booth, go with the officials on the field, and if they say, look, he held him twice, that's the call, and everybody agrees on it, then there is no disputing it. They've spoken by saying that, and during live game time, not at a pool of reporters and in front of a press conference, and you got the call right. And I think that that's what bothers me so much in basketball today, and especially as it relates to the pro game. If you don't save your one green light challenge, and there's a key part of the game where you know in the camera show, guy stepped out of bounds, or there was a goaltending that should have been called, or something else, well, if you don't have that one call left, then it sucks to be you, but it's not going to go your way. If you truly want to get it the right way and you want to avoid press conferences and referees having to speak, and by the way, the referees do love, by the way, now when there's a challenge, they get to turn the mic on, and some guys are like overdoing it.
Some guys do. Some guys
to
do.
To show how well they speak, and they're looking for another career. But the main thing is to get the call right. If that's the case, then screw the green light and how many red flag challenges you are. Let them, you know, get the call right.
And I don't understand, like, the podium thing, too. Like, even if they were wrong, like, you know, an umpire missed a call off the plate. I missed it. My bad. But like, what are you going to do?
I think that's
like,
what people want to hear.
But I just don't understand the gratification.
They want you to own it.
Where I think that there could be accountability, though, in officials is I feel like in all sports that they should have a better grading system in terms of accuracy, getting calls right, and they should be assigned based more on merit and success, like how much success they have getting calls right, and assign them based on that. Whereas opposed to like Major League Baseball, basically you get tenured status where you're a made man. You can never get fired. You can never get sent down to the minor leagues. You can never be let go. We see this all the time in the NBA where the guys who are veterans have been there for a long time. They get the best assignments no matter like what the game is. See it a lot of times in football too. Like, and we see these all-star crews. I feel like there should be more of a grading system put in place where the officials that are really good based on the grading system get the better assignments. I think that 10% that are bad, I think they should get fired. I think they should fire 10% of the officials.
That.
Yeah, I know they have the grading system, but they don't get rid of guys?
Yes, they do, and they have. And they have in the past.
Okay, well, the other sports
can
do that.
Both male and female. And they've made changes because of the grading system. And if it's consistently bad, I don't think in one season everybody can have a bad year.
Sure.
But if it's consistent over time, you don't see the Angel Hernandezes anymore. You don't see the guys that, you know, consistently are known for their bad calls and no one cares about it. You see a system in which I know whether it's a demotion or not, a lot of times you're never going to see that official again. In certain cases, they let them try and work their way back up. But the NBA has done it in the past.
Okay, then I didn't know that. And Major League Baseball and the NFL should have a system more like that. Because Major League Baseball, once you're like up, you're up for good. Like that's why Angel Hernandez is still around. Joe West was still around until he retired.
Yep.
Those guys are always around. There should be a grading system in place. And the bottom, however many percent, I like 10%, the bottom 10%, they get sent down to the G League. The top 10% of the G League, they get sent up.
And
that's
what
the NBA's is.
We talked about yesterday about how ideally the XFL and the USFL's best bet for longevity would be to be the minor league system to the NFL. I think that in so many ways, when you have that minor league system, we see about it. You can experiment with things. We saw baseball experimenting with the computer-run strike zone and all the different things that they can see if it works or not. At the same time, the same way a player gets sent down, an umpire should be able to get sent down, a referee should be able to get sent down. Because truly, you want the best at their job as professionals in their sport, and if you're not ready for prime time, then go work on your craft in the minor leagues. And if every league had a minor leagues like that, then they could use the system too.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, let's get to the Steichen Colts, the marriage made in... It's Valentine's Day, marriage made in heaven. What would a Shane Steichen, Bryce Young look like for the Colts? What would Steichen, C.J. Stroud look like for the Colts? What would Shane Steichen and Will Levis look like for the Colts? And how much pressure do any of those pairings put on the Houston Texans? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I'm walking around like a 70-year-old man. I rolled my ankle this weekend. I didn't want to tell anybody yesterday. I was trying to play through it. I'm in some pain.
It was
a little bit of pain.
It was an inquisitive look I gave you when I saw you get out of the truck with... the full Jerry Glanville, Johnny Cash, black pants, black golf short, and then the sandals. So I was are you going to do the game like that?
Well, I had to change the shoes in the car. I changed the shoes. I had to grit through it. Look at the swelling on that thing, man. It's black and blue. Sprained my ankle. I'm walking around like I'm 70. Did it hiking.
It doesn't look like it's that bad.
It's pretty. It's because I've been icing. I've been taking care of
it. Okay, that's good.
It was a painful fall.
Hiking?
Yeah, I was hiking.
I'm sure the terrain here in Houston is rough, but where were we hiking?
We went to the hill country for the weekend.
Oh.
And I had Branham baby on me.
In a backpack or something?
Yeah, like one of those, I don't know
carrier.
What called. Carrier. And he was you know, in front of me. And I took a step on a rock weird and like, it was like, it was me or him.
Yeah.
And I wore it. And here I am walking around like I'm 70 years old.
Stop, tuck, and roll so that he stays high and you go low.
There was
and take
no
the pain.
There was no roll. It was more of a boom.
So you hit the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I landed on my butt. And my back doesn't feel great either. I'm an old man. This is embarrassing. I'm going to have to get in shape.
You didn't catch
I
a stray rock somewhere, did you?
I didn't.
I mean, if you fall, I mean, there's you can
no.
you could hit a rock in your
it was
back
a pretty. It was like
or...
a... It was like a big rock.
Like a trail?
Like almost like a rectangular big rock.
Okay.
And I was taking a step down. Yeah, riveting radio. I'm an old man. A couple of news items. Jonathan Gannon is the new head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. I thought he told everybody in Philadelphia he wasn't going anywhere. That lasted long. I guess you weren't going anywhere for a few weeks. I can tell you this, Philadelphia Eagle fans, they're parading on Broad Street that Jonathan Gannon is leaving the city of brotherly love.
It's interesting, though, that they lose both coordinators to see now what the Eagles do, because they have, as we mentioned, too, six guys that are entering free agency on the defense alone, I believe, that were starters, and to see what they can, even if they maintain keeping a majority of those guys, you know, losing both coordinators, obviously on offense, when you've got a guy that in Sirianni that seems to be deeply involved in the offense, they shouldn't miss a beat that much there, but you don't know. Mm-hmm. But then defensively, you do have some pieces. It should be a job that a lot of people would want, but is there going to be a different scheme? Is there going to be different terminology? It's going to be things that they're going to have to adjust to. And like I said, keeping those guys on the defensive side of the football. But if you're a Texans fan, keep an eye on how the Eagles react to this, just simply because of the fact that if they elevate their quarterback coach, that means they believe in keeping the system for Jalen Hurts and keeping the playbook and keeping a lot of things so that he's comfortable. And if they bring in someone from the outside, see how many changes they go through, because that offense was tailor-made for him this year.
Yeah, the carousel completely closed now. And who led the offense, of course, was Shane Steichen. And Steichen's headed to the Colts. Jim Irsay, we'll play some Jim Irsay here in a little bit. I'll be honest with you. Seeing what Shane Steichen did with Philadelphia, seeing what Shane Steichen did to Jalen Hurts, where many people going into this year were questioning if Jalen Hurts was worth anything as a quarterback in the NFL. And if Jalen Hurts didn't get hurt, he's probably the MVP. He was fantastic in the Super Bowl, and if his defense didn't let him down, Jalen Hurts is a Super Bowl winner. How much was that Steichen? How much of that was Sirianni? How much of that is Jalen Hurts? But if I'm a Houston Texans fan, and I'm looking what the Colts are doing, and they bring in Shane Steichen, who made Jalen Hurts look really, really good, or played part of it, part of that role, and they bring in a quarterback to go into that Shane Steichen system, whether it's Bryce Young, whether it's C.J. Stroud, whether it's Will Levis, I think that Colts offense especially has a chance to really take off. If they find the right QB, they have Steichen. Look, Jonathan Taylor needs to have a bounce back year after he was hurt this past year. But let's not forget that Jonathan Taylor was the best running back going into the NFL this season, and that injuries derailed him. If they hit it QB, and I think Steichen has the ability to bring the most out of a quarterback. We saw a little bit of that in Philadelphia. I think the Colts offense has a chance to be really good in the next couple of years.
I think we hit on it in just what we mentioned when I was talking about what he did for Jalen Hurts. As much as we saw Jalen Hurts take a massive step up in year two, and everybody was wondering, you know, what did he do and all the work he must have put in to be more accurate and be all the things that he was this year, I don't think enough credit went to Steichen and the offensive side of the coaching staff that decided to do what they needed to do to make the system fit him better too, so that you could get the most out of everybody. And that's what he could do. If Steichen comes into that situation and he knows and earmarks the quarterback that he wants, and they move up to go get him because the Texans couldn't do what they needed to do, and he says, well, if we get this guy, we build the system this way. But if we get our guy because we have the number one pick, this is how I'm going to build this whole thing to make this quarterback succeed. That's what you want. You want an offensive-minded guy that isn't going to force his system down the throat of a rookie quarterback. You want a guy that's going to take a rookie quarterback and say, these are your strengths. These are what we see as your best attributes. We're going to capitalize on those things. We've got good young receivers. Like you mentioned, you've got a safety valve behind you that was the best running back in football 2 years ago, go Badgers. And you've got an opportunity for him to be there again because he's still very young. I think that he was in a tough situation. He got dinged up a little bit. And then with the quarterback carousel and musical quarterbacks that they were doing and coaches, they just decided to kind of shelve him for a year.
You know what my worst fear is here, actually? And we know where I stand on these rookie quarterbacks. But I tweeted this like 3 weeks ago, but before the Houston Texans signed DeMeco, before we knew where Shane Steichen was going, that Will Levis would be perfect in a Shane Steichen offense. Where if you look what Philadelphia is doing, and Steichen has the ability to kind of evolve and do different things based on personnel, I believe. We don't know that as a head coach. But if you watch that Eagles offense, they did a lot of like RPO stuff. Where maybe it wasn't like an RPO guaranteed call where Jalen Hurts had the option every single play, but there are elements of the RPO, elements of play action, building off of that. Shotgun 3 wide, shotgun 4 wide, and that was the way that their offense would work. Will Levis and that style of offense terrifies me. And also a quarterback with the ability to run. Like, Will Levis, people don't realize this because Will Levis this past year was hurt all year. Will Levis is probably the best running quarterback in this draft from the top three. He's not a better runner than
I
would agree. Richardson.
I don't think anybody really realizes
that. Yeah, they don't. They don't because they look at what he did this year, and he had negative yards because they did not run because he had turf toe and he got sacked. And in college football, when you get sacked, it counts to the quarterback's rushing stats. It's not like that in the NFL. But if you watch him 2 years ago, the dude was an elite runner where he was breaking tackles. He was, you know, outrunning people. He was leaping over linebackers. He is a dynamic athlete. You put him in that Shane Steichen offense, and because of my love for Will Levis, I do not want Will Levis to go to Indy. I don't want him to be coached by Shane Steichen with a division rival in the Indianapolis Colts because I don't want to have to watch that offense succeed for the next decade when I was yelling at the tallest of hills that I wanted Will Levis with the Houston Texans.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out because, you know, I said all along I wanted an offensive-minded head coach. And, like, I'm going to reiterate this for anybody that decides to go off the deep end on this. I love the DeMeco hire for all the reasons of the fit, the former player, the imaging, the marketing, the whole resurrection of the franchise thing. But the one thing I was concerned about was not getting an offensive-minded head coach when it comes to a quarterback. Yeah. And if this is exactly why. Because if you get a guy that has not only been successful as an offensive coordinator, but can actually mold an offense around whatever personnel you get or have, you can succeed even faster and have longevity doing such if he's the head coach because he ain't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an offensive coordinator and you do it in a year's time, you're going to do it somewhere else as a head coach. And so that's why I had the concerns I had then. That's why, to your point, I have some concerns now. You get an offensive-minded head coach in Indianapolis, they got a ton of weapons all around the field and talent on both sides of the football. And you get the right quarterback in the hands of the right guy that's going to build a system around him, that's trouble.
Yeah. I want Will Levis to go anywhere else. If it's not Houston, I want him to go anywhere else but Indy. Because I don't want to watch Will Levis with a division rival and Shane Steichen as his head coach. Jim Irsay was talking at the introductory press conference a little bit earlier. And a lot of people are overreacting, thinking that he might have tipped his hand here.
We're not hiding. You know, no one can shy away from the fact what quarterback means in this league. And how we have to look going forward, where Shane and Chris really, you know, dig into this draft and really see where you're at. Do you stay put? Do you trade up? You know, there's many things you can do. They took Jalen in the second round, so trade back. So he likes
that'll
picks.
That'll be a Twitter freaking clone.
He likes picks. Although the Alabama guy doesn't look bad, I tell you.
A lot of people are saying that Jim Irsay tipped his hand here. All that quote tells you is that Bryce Young won't fall behind pick number four. That's all that says.
And that they might feel the need to move up to number one. It also sounds like he was enjoying some...
He always sounds like
he really
that.
Does. I mean, he actually makes Cal sound better. I'm not going to say makes Cal sound great, but he makes Cal sound better with the way he handles press conferences, too. And he's a loose cannon. Look, I mean, you're right. I think that the matchup of getting Steichen and the quarterback he wants is something the Texans have to pay attention to and be a little concerned about, and we'll see how it all plays out. But you know that with a guy like Chris Ballard and the way he built the rest of that roster, and he really did start from the trenches and build out, and then he struggled so mightily to try and find the right guy to run the whole thing at quarterback. If they now are in the ideal position to get the right quarterback and get any quarterback they want, if Joe's Bears are willing to, you know, relent and give up the pick, if you're a Texans fan, you should be concerned. You should be pissed off because all you had to do was lay down and play dead one more time, and you would have had control of the whole draft.
I just don't think you can put any stock into what Irsay said. Like, I don't know if Irsay's sophisticated enough to bluff everybody, but there's so much stuff that goes around. And they just hired a coach. Like, they haven't even gotten together and talked about what they're looking for in the draft. They have picked four. They don't know what it's going to take to move up in the draft. They could stay pat and still get a very good quarterback in this draft. I'm just putting zero weight in what Jim Irsay had to say. Because he mentioned Bryce Young at the end of a press conference, saying, oh, that Alabama quarterback looks pretty good. All that tells you, it doesn't tell you that the Colts are trading up to number one. All that is telling you is that Bryce Young will not be available after pick number four.
Especially that franchise. Like, if we walked away on April 27th or whatever, it's that Friday, we come in here, and with the fourth pick in the draft, the Indianapolis Colts drafted Anthony Richardson, I wouldn't be shocked.
Anthony Richardson with Shane Steichen is also pretty terrifying.
It's just like, it's the one franchise that, like, Derek Carr is expected to get cut in the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
Would it stun you if they just keep trying this veteran QB thing?
It would.
Well, I was
going to
say,
it would stun me.
It would be because of what they've already given up and how they've swung and missed on it. But if they do that route, if they go with a Richardson, which we know is kind of a longer-term, two-year project type of quarterback, then my next question was going to be, well, then who's your bridge?
A Carr Richardson.
But you're going to spend that much money on a Carr?
Duo would be really interesting, actually.
You're right. Because then you kind of let Richardson sit for a little bit. Jalen Hurts sat for a year.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you guys this then. Which is the better situation if you're Carr, New Orleans or Indianapolis? Which roster is ready to win?
Is Alvin Kamara going to jail?
We still don't know.
We're talking money being the same.
Yeah.
If money's the same, Saints or Indy, which the Saints are in cap hell. I don't know how money would be the same, but if we're assuming that money
is
the same.
It doesn't matter.
Let's say money's the same. You think it's Indy over.
Is that an
the
easier
Saints?
Division to win than winning the upside down division of.
I would say no.
I would say no as well.
I think it's easier to win the NFC South.
I would agree.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Carr is the best quarterback by a couple miles in that division.
Yeah.
You go there, you know you're going to get to the playoffs, you know you're going to win the division.
But what are you throwing to? I mean, you have Olave.
Chris Olave.
You have Olave.
You have Michael Thomas if you can ever get him.
Yeah, I think
if Kamara's not in jail.
I think Thomas is gone. They restructure his deal.
Taysom Hill.
So you have Alvin Kamara, Chris Olave versus Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce, who I liked a lot coming out of Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think Pittman's a little bit underrated too. I think Pittman would take off with a better quarterback.
With a consistent quarterback.
I think that the skill position players in Indy are slightly better by a hair.
Probably similar.
Kamara's kind of on the downside, and and you have the off the field.
The Colts by a hair from a skill position point of view on the offensive side, but the division's easier in the NFC South.
It is.
But the coach is probably better.
Steichen versus
Indy.
Allen.
But that's
a good point.
That's true.
But
it's true. Thing. And he's an offensive-minded coach as opposed to Dennis Allen being a defensive-minded coach.
But Dennis Allen was his first coach in the NFL, right? Or is his second coach, Derek Carr?
Oh, yeah. At the Raiders, that's right.
So it's
that might not be a good thing, though.
He got fired for a reason.
Give me Indy. If I'm Carr, give me Indy.
I think that's scary, too, right? Because now you got a veteran for the short term that's better than the veterans you brought in previously because he's not over the hill yet like Matt Ryan was and like Carson Wentz was. So you've got a short-term solution with a roster that's otherwise ready to win, and then you've got a long-term possibility in the draft that you could develop, and in 2 years' time, when you maybe are ready to move on from Carr, and he's on the downside, you got someone to replace him.
I think Carr is fascinating.
I don't think the Texans would be good enough, quick enough, though, where Carr would matter from a Texans point of view.
From a Texans point of view, yeah, the Texans are a little bit farther off than that, so that's a very good point.
Because, what about Tampa?
For Carr?
Yeah.
I think he's going to go to the Saints. I really do.
A lot of people today were talking about Frank Reich, bring him to Carolina.
I like the staff that Frank Reich's putting together.
DJ Moore. Hired Jim Caldwell.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty good staff that he's putting together. There's some thought that he might bring Eric Bieniemy to Carolina.
It's an interesting, Derek Carr is not the best quarterback in the NFL, but.
No, that's safe to say, Joe. Really hot take there.
You have Tampa Bay, Carolina, New Orleans, Indianapolis, Washington. We would all view them in a much better light when they signed Derek Carr than we do right now, I think.
I think you might be overrating David Carr's brother. I think he's a top 15 quarterback. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback.
Well, even if
I think that's what he like.
But I mean, even if he's Kirk Cousins in the right situation,
he's not as good as Kirk Cousins.
Ooh, I think he is. I think he is. I think he's
Kirk Cousins is consistently a double-digit winning quarterback in the NFL. Derek Carr has been to the playoffs what, once?
Well, they made it last year in hell year.
I think that was the only time.
But at the same time, if you give him...
Well, technically, he made it one other time, but he got hurt.
Okay.
When they lost to the Texans.
But Kirk Cousins winning double-digit games year in, year out.
I don't think Kirk's good.
I'm saying he's better than David Carr's
brother. In a lot of ways, both financially and with the teams he's played on, Kirk had the right place at the right time, strike him multiple times. He's the golden child.
He's better than Derek.
If you have the best skill position player in the NFL that's not a quarterback on your team, you probably look like a better quarterback, and that's Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. Sure. But you had Devontae Adams in Las Vegas this year, and you didn't exactly exploit him.
He regressed. Yeah. He went backwards. He was better last year without Devontae.
He really did.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Speaking of drafts, we got to make mock drafts great again. Chad Reuter, NFL.com, the latest and greatest, maybe. He has the Texans trading up to number one. What do the Texans do, and how much do they give up for number one? Would you be willing to do that? Skiller B's on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We're going to make mock drafts great again. That's what we do with the Killer Bees. We make mock drafts great again. Some people are texting some really nasty things about Jim Irsay. Don't text us nasty things about Jim Irsay. Like 2568 Bluff, you mean Irsay's drugged up enough to tell you? Don't say that Jim Irsay's drugged up. Stop sending us your nasty Jim Irsay text at 713-780-ESPN. Don't send them to the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. 2831 tipped his hand. Irsay sounds like he tipped his bottle too much. That's no way to talk about an NFL owner. 713-780-3776.
Brett Favre can sue them, not me, but that's kind of what I was.
I wish that I was on the Brett Favre lawsuit. Get a little cachet from Brett Favre trying to.
He's suing Shannon Sharpe and somebody else.
Pat McAfee. Oh,
that's right.
Pat McAfee said, bring it, baby. McAfee's up for the fight.
That's good.
Brandon T, do you think had Will Levis played at Alabama, more fans would want him to be a Texan? Yes, absolutely. And Will Levis might have been able to do something that Bryce Young did not do and was the first QB1 at Alabama that didn't do it since Blake Sims, and that's win a national championship. Why are you shaking your head, Joe George?
I hate that. You keep saying that.
It's a troll. I don't know.
I know it is.
I don't care about winning in college football.
Like, you're right. Like, you're factually correct.
Of course I am.
But, it just doesn't factor into how good Georgia
is. It is right. It is right.
It's 100%
right. How much did Patrick Mahomes win in college? How much did Josh Allen win in college? Now, Joe Burrow won a lot in college.
Well, I don't – how much – Josh Allen might have won in college. I wasn't exactly following Wyoming football.
I mean, I think they did great in the MAC.
Not
the MAC. I'm stupid. The MWC, Mountain West.
He won so much that I always associate him with what's the powerhouse of the
South Dakota State?
Yeah.
I don't know how I knew what you were talking about.
Yeah, I always associate him with, South Dakota State.
Yeah, it's up there.
Do you mean North Dakota State?
Or North Dakota State, yeah.
Where Trey Lance and Carson Wentz went?
Is South Dakota State not a powerhouse in college in Division II football?
I think the semifinal was North Dakota State, South Dakota State.
I think you're right.
Yeah, exactly. They're a blue blood in D2.
South Dakota State's done some damage in the tournament, too, I think.
I think they do have one win.
I think they won a game last year,
I think
right?
they won. I don't know if it was last year.
2 years ago?
I remember they had a dude who played the league. This was probably 12, 14 years ago, where he was a really good college player. I think played 3 years in the NBA.
Basketball?
He was a white guy, as you might have guessed. Yeah, he was good. He was real good. I forget his name, though. 713-780-ESPN.
Wyoming back in the day had Fennis Dembo.
No, yeah. This dude who played at South. It was either I think it was South Dakota, actually. I think it was South Dakota, not South Dakota State. And I saw them play live. I was doing women's games back in the day. And we were playing at Washington, and it was a men-women doubleheader, and I was, blown away by how good this guy was. And then, lo and behold, he got signed by an NBA team that year and, stuck around in the NBA for
South
a couple
Dakota,
seasons.
You say?
I think pretty sure it was South Dakota. Pretty sure it was South Dakota. Okay. I can fact-check it a little bit. I think it might have been South Dakota that won in the tournament, Joe, not South Dakota State.
That's fair.
Mike but, Dam? Whatever.
I can't say I'm up to date with.
I couldn't tell you this dude's name, even if you told me his name.
South Dakota State from 2015 to 2019.
No, I think that was too recent. We'll find out later because no one really cares about South Dakota basketball. I think they're the Jackrabbits, by the way. We're gonna make mock drafts great again.
That's correct. That I can verify.
They are the Jackrabbits.
They are the Jackrabbits.
Nate Wolters.
I think that's it.
That sounds right. Doesn't it?
I think it's it. I think is he a white
that
guy?
Name, that Nate. Well,
when did he play?
2013.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's him.
Played with Milwaukee, the Pelicans, and the Jazz.
And he went
for
where?
3 years. He went to South Dakota.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the guy. He was really good in college. Unstoppable.
Your other two options were Steve Lingenfelter and Tom Black, who probably is.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Troy Walters.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Nate, I remember he was good, Walters. Man. Nate, not Troy. Troy's the receivers coach for the Bengals, almost the offense coordinator.
Oh, he was with the Bucks. I remember that guy.
There
I
you go.
Yep.
Look at
now
that.
I just saw his picture. Yes, I do remember him. Yep.
This is probably his name was Nate.
Drafted round 2, pick 8 by Washington. Nate Wolters.
Yeah, I have a scouting eye. Everybody likes to disagree with me. Oh, you have no idea what I have a scouting eye. I knew that Nate Wolters was going to be an NBA player before anybody knew that Nate Wolters was going to be an NBA player. I got an eye for talent, Joe George. I got an eye for talent, Blankers. It's just something that I possess. It's a skill that I have.
He now runs a Dairy Queen in South Dakota.
Really?
No, I made that up.
They don't have Dairy Queens in South Dakota, do they?
They got them in Wisconsin.
What?
Why would they not have a Dairy Queen in South Dakota?
I thought it was a Southern thing.
No.
They got them in Wisconsin.
Dairy Queen?
The reason why I said that is Joe Wolf,
it's not
who had a long career in the NBA as well and was recruited between Marquette and Carolina, chose Carolina.
Am I dumb?
Joe Wolf, who was a Rocket? He was a lot of different He was on a lot of different teams. Joe Wolf owns Dairy Queens in Wisconsin. He's from Kohler, Wisconsin. He owns the Dairy Queen in Kohler and other places. It's a big deal.
No, there's no Dairy Queen up there.
Yes.
I stand corrected. I did not know that. For some reason, I thought Dairy Queen was a southern thing.
I bet you want to go to Kohler, Wisconsin. I bet you do. Because there's something that you would like to do there.
What I like to do there?
Whistling Straits.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
There you go.
That is right. U.S. Open.
That's right. A couple
years ago.
And a PGA.
I always thought Dairy Queens were a southern thing.
No. Grew up on Dairy Queen. I played for the Dairy Queen Royals when I was a kid.
Why would I know this? I'm not from the north like you guys are.
Why would you assume that it was just the south?
Yeah. Y'all are being like, y'all are ganging up with me because you're a couple of northerners against the guy from the south.
Well, you know what they say about assumptions. Makes an ass out of you and me. Come on.
I haven't heard that before. Thanks, Joe.
Well, I think we need to go to break now. That was so bad.
Already.
Fire it.
All right, yeah. Let's make mock drafts. We just got hijacked by Nate Wolters. Let's make mock drafts great again when we come back. Killer, because this segment.
We are going to a break. That was awesome.
Can we burn this tape? Can we burn this segment? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5. Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, making mock drafts great again. Hopefully Nate Wolters doesn't come up ever again. Chad Reuter, who covers the NFL for NFL.com, he's colleagues with Lance Erlein. He put together a three-round. No, he's not. He's an NFL Chad Reuter.
He could still be a Roto Reuter.
That's more fantasy than mocks. Anyways, he has the Texans trading up to number one. Here is the trade package that he suggests. The Bears, by the way, trade down twice and then trade up. Like this mock drafts, maybe it is fantasy. Anyways, he has the Texans trading up to number one, of course, using the number two pick, a third and fifth this year, and then a next year first-round pick, the one from Cleveland.
Say it one more time so you get
you're trading two, a third-rounder this year, a fifth-rounder this year, and then next year's Cleveland's first. To move up one spot in the NFL draft, would you do that? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776.
And the one from Cleveland next year.
The first rounder from Cleveland next year.
That's not as bad as I was.
What?
I still wouldn't do it, but based on what they said, what the Colts-Bears trade was going to be, I thought the Colts were giving up a lot more.
No, Now he has the Colts trading up to number two with the Bears. He has them giving them a second and a third to move up
Bears
two spots.
That's my issue with this mock draft is there's no way that going from two to one includes a first round pick, but going from four to two does not. I don't think that makes sense. The Bears gave up a first to go from three to two to get Trubisky in 2017. So why would they take a one? Because if you're forcing the Texans to give up a first-round pick next year, it's because the Colts are offering you a similar package, right? So I feel like you would still be asking for that first-rounder.
But one has way more value than two. The first pick has way more value than the second pick.
I guess it depends on who's calling. Like, how many teams are calling for the second pick once you have
that? Sure. I mean, because the price is so expensive at number one, it's because both teams are trying to trade up, according to Chad Reuter. I don't think that the Texans could trade up to number one without including a first-round pick.
See, that's the thing. If it was just one team trying to get quarterback, but because you got two, the Texans are worried about it. They want the insurance policy of having one. The Colts are in desperate need of a quarterback and are going to trade one way or the other, it looks like, to get what they want. Now, if I'm the Bears, I just sit back and go, well, every time that one of the other team makes an offer, go, let me call the other team because this is the last offer they made, and you just keep pushing up the price and keep making both sides panic, and at the end of the day, you're going to get a haul.
Yeah, it's all about how good of poker they can play and also how far they're willing to move back. You know, because I think
they'd be willing to move back to four.
I think they'll go back.
I think that's true.
I wonder if they'll consider going back farther, and that's going to drive up the price for the Texans in a way. Like, what would
four? They're guaranteed of getting one of the two defensive players. So that four is, I think, as far back as they would go.
What if they love Miles Murphy and Tyree Wilson, though? Because now that brings six into the equation and probably brings more than six. Because if we think that Levis, Young, and Stroud are going to go in the top five, if you add Murphy and Wilson to that list, then the Bears, they'd be willing to trade to seven because you're guaranteed Now, it's probably not going to be Anderson or Carter, but you're guaranteed Miles Murphy or Tyree Wilson.
But see, I think you're looking – I think they'll go back, as far, in my opinion, as far as nine.
And who are the other two players that because you think would I think attract Paris, them? Do they need corner?
I think Paris Johnson and Peter Skoronski, the tackles from Ohio State and Northwestern, are very much in play because they have one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. Like, they've got $100 million in cap space.
Carolina would love quarterback.
So it's like, what could you get? Like, it's just – if Carolina called and said, hey, we'll give you DJ Moore – and a first next year and nine to move up to one, like, would you do it?
Sure.
What if Davante Adams, like, was a legitimate option? The Raiders get rid of that cap space. They give up Davante something else, and they move up. Like,
but,
I just think.
But the Raiders aren't giving up Davante unless they know that Aaron and or another veteran quarterback isn't coming there, because that's the lure.
But they'll know at that point.
Yeah, they'll know by April 27th.
I don't know. I think there's to me, there's no way the Colts can move up to two without giving up a first. And the only way, if I'm the Texans, I'm giving up a first-round pick, even though I'm the one that has said on the show multiple times, like, I would go get my guy.
Yeah.
That's if you evaluate them at a major difference point. Like,
is it safe to say, though, that the Bears aren't making a trade unless they can secure a future first? Because I believe that no matter who trades with the Bears, they're going to have to give up a first next year.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why the Texans can't move up one spot for anything less than a first. Like, if there wasn't demand there.
That's what I'm saying.
If there wasn't demand for number one, where the Colts weren't calling, the Panthers weren't calling, the Raiders weren't calling, and the Texans are just so scared, and there's no one else calling the Bears, then maybe they can move up one spot for, like, maybe even like a third. But that's not happening in this draft. There's going to be so much demand for that top spot. I don't see a scenario where Bryce Young's not the first overall pick. And if Bryce Young's the first overall pick, there's a 90% chance it's not the Chicago Bears that are selecting
him. Right, absolutely.
So there's so much demand for number one. I don't envision a scenario and where the Texans can move up a spot without surrendering a first-round draft pick.
It's one thing to say you're just flipping in this year's first round, but the Bears aren't making any deal unless they secure a future first, aside from the flip, and probably a whole lot more, because you're going to, like you said, look, we're only talking about Indy and the Texans, but Carolina's probably going to kick the tires on an opportunity to move up. There's going to be other teams that want to get into the top four. And so, I mean, ideally, this is exactly why we were so concerned at the time about the Texans losing that last game of the regular season. It's one thing to say the Texans are going to Texan. It's another thing to say Lovey's farewell parting gift on the way out, and he got to chuckle. It's, you know, and shaking it off a little bit. But when you see that the Bears could possibly make two trades, still get a guy that they want or guys that they wanted, and get a haul and a half from two different teams, this is what the Texans could have done.
See, somebody texted in saying, imagine a scenario where the Texans could have just locked up the first pick. That would have been cool. Facts. And I put that more on Caserio than anything else. Just don't play your guys. I expected whenever I proposed this trade to you that you would have been way out of it, Blinkers, where you're trading up one spot, you're including a third, a fifth, and next year's Cleveland's first. I'm surprised Joe's out on that, because Joe's been pretty, like, he's been, of the three of us, he's been the one guy that says, yeah, go get your guy. Go get him. At number one, move up one spot, go get him, make sure that you bring him in. I'm surprised that you're against this.
I think it's just like, if we walked in the next day and that's what the Colts gave up to move to two, and Caserio gave up a one to go from two to one, it just feels like he got hoodwinked.
I see what you're saying.
Like, it's just I think it's the more of, like, what happened after, of, like, how could that happen, and then it leads to the next thing.
I understand that, but I just, number one has so much more value than number two. Under any circumstance or scenario, are y'all comfortable with the Texans trading a future first or number 12 to move up one spot?
I'm not.
Joe?
I would say 12, no. Future first, yes.
So probably Cleveland, because that's probably the lowest value first rounder.
Assuming you're not
going
to be good again, and yours is going to be too valuable.
Like, yeah, because I mean, what if you're another team and you're asking the Texans what you want? If you're Chicago, are you putting more emphasis on the Texans 24 first or the Cleveland 24 first? Every team in the NFL would rather have the Texans 24 first.
Yeah, obviously the more valuable is going to be the Texans for almost, like you'd say, 90%.
I wouldn't do it.
Voting audience or more believes that the Texans pick is going to be way more valuable than the Cleveland pick.
I wouldn't trade 12. I wouldn't trade the Texans first rounder next year. I wouldn't trade Cleveland's first rounder next year. And I wouldn't even trade the Texans second rounder this year, which is pick number 34, 33rd overall selection. It's too much for me. Like, the Texans have so many other holes. And for me, and again, this depends on everybody's draft board. Like Joe was saying, if there's a huge gap between QB1 and QB2, where the Texans feel like inclined that they have to do it, For me, there's not a significant drop-off of any of the top two quarterbacks in this draft where I desperately need to move up to number one. But Chad Reuter, he has the Texans trading up to number one and selecting Bryce Young. So Bryce Young goes number one after the Houston Texans give up this King's ransom to trade up for a 5'8" quarterback that has to crow hop to throw the football 40 yards like a wounded duck. C.J. Stroud goes number two to the Colts in this draft, which I think is a bit of a reach, but whatever. We're operating with Reuter's draft. Jalen Carter goes three. Will Anderson goes four. Will Levis goes five. So there's your top five. People love to know where Bijan Robinson goes. Bijan Robinson goes number 10 to Philadelphia, which Eagles. Is the Blankers call. Yep. The more I think of this, by the way, Blankers, I love this for Philadelphia.
Yeah. It's a flyer pick that you can afford to do, and if you add him to the mix of a Super Bowl team, look the hell out.
It's basically a house money pick.
Yes.
Like, it's a house money pick. You let Sanders walk, who's going to be more expensive than Bijan Robinson. Maybe it allows you to keep more of your own free agents in-house. Is it reachy for a running back? Yeah, a little bit, but he could also catch 70 passes out of the backfield.
He could be the next version of the next big thing like Jonathan Taylor. You got to spend a little more capital. You can afford to spend it with the team that you have. And like you said, the other thing that makes sense is then maybe you save some money on that side of the football so you can spend it on the defensive side of the football where you have so many guys to lock back up.
Yeah, I think it's the pick. I think Bijan Robinson's not. I need to look at some Bijan Robinson props because if they have Bijan Robinson over under like 19, I'm going to play a little bit of that. Anyways, Bijan goes number 10. Houston Texans are on the clock at number 12. And they go defensive tackle out of Pittsburgh, Kalaha Kansi. I don't know how to say his first name. Kansi's his last name. So a defensive tackle for D'Amico Ryans. This is as high as I've seen Kansi going in any of these drafts. I like him. He's a big physical player. I think he fits into D'Amico's like wide nine, four down lineman technique.
Well, you hope that he comes out of Pittsburgh like another guy that played D-line at Pittsburgh,
you
Aaron Donald.
Love him to be Aaron Donald. Donald's the 13th pick in 14, by the way. So the Texans picking 12 in 23.
Is it a poor man's Jalen Carter pick?
I saw this yesterday. I think it was Matt Miller said that if he had the measurables of Jalen Carter, there would be a real debate of which one's better.
Really?
That, like, he's that skilled.
So you get quarterback and Carter light as opposed to a lot of people wanting to go defense and going Carter and then hoping, like, Anthony Richardson falls to you at 12.
And I was watching, so you know, people were putting out tape of him yesterday because, like, after this mock draft, he caught a lot of steam. He really, like, no one could stop him
really
in the ACC. It looked like he looks like a monster.
I've seen bits and pieces of him, and I've seen, like, his measurables. Lot to like about him, but we've been playing the game where the Texans are on the
clock
at number
12. By the way, you talked me off of wide receiver at 12. Yeah. If there's legit wide receiver one, then I don't want to waste a pick that high when there's too many other, like, best player availables to fill other voids on your team.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
It's Valentine's Day.
Anyways, the Kansi goes 12 in this draft. We've been putting ourselves in the Texans' shoes based on these people's mocks, based on who they drafted. Bryce Young, in this case, at number one. We're allowed to choose from who the Texans picked at 12. And then the next three guys. So Kansi's the pick here. He's one of the four options that we have. Anthony Richardson would be the next pick to the Jets, which we're not drafting Richardson because we have Bryce Young under this mock draft. Broderick Jones, the offensive tackle from Georgia, is going number 14 to the Patriots. And then Jackson Smith and Jigba goes 15 to the Green Bay Packers. So you're on the clock at number 12. You have the option, after having Bryce Young as your number one pick, to trade up to get him. You have Kansi, Richardson, Jones, or Jackson Smith and Jigba. Which of the four are you going with?
I like the kid from Pittsburgh, from what you guys have said.
I thought you were going to say Smith and Jigba after you gave me all that praise.
I like the fact he's not a true wide receiver one. I need a true wide receiver one if that's where I'm taking him in the draft. And I think that D'Amico's going to get a defensive guy. D'Amico wants to rebuild his defense, and this is your first kind of olive branch to your head coach going, okay, we got our quarterback early. Let's get you someone that you can work with on defense with the second first-round pick, and you go that route, and you get a kid that could be disruptive and be an impact player for you on the D-line.
I would go Jackson Smith and Jigba.
You go on the receiver there?
I think he's really good.
I think he's a wide receiver one.
I don't know if he's like in terms of wide receiver one, like, is he going to be, you know, even what Olave is or a Jamar Chase or a Jefferson? Like, maybe not, but I think he can be a very good player in the NFL.
I think he's getting a little bit overlooked, to be honest with you. Like, I'm seeing him slide further and further. Yeah, you're right. I've seen him go in second round. Like, I like him more than what we're seeing from the mocks. Now, if I have these four options, and I don't really care about the wide receiver one conversation either. Like, I keep it simple, stupid. I'm a very, like, simplistic type of what's your strategy, what's your philosophy, draft the best player. Like, I don't care where he is relative to his position, relative to the NFL.
I'm so concerned about wide receiver. One is, assuming Mechie's healthy, Mechie's a guy that can play the slot. He can move him around. He should be a quality player for you. You've got a guy that you're still trying to figure out on the roster as another not wide receiver one, and you're assuming Brandon Cooks is not going to be your wide receiver one. The only reason why I would take the pick that high is if I need a guy that can fill the wide receiver one spot because I have other options for the other positions.
I like some of the receivers in the second and third round. They're going to be there too, where I really have no interest in drafting receiver at number 12. I like Kancey of these four options as well, especially after you get Bryce Young at one. D'Amico's going to need a first-round defensive player. If you're not going with that in the top two, Kancey, who can be a Jalen Carter light, I'm going with you on that pick as well. 713-780-ESPN. Put yourselves in the Texans' shoes in this mock. Who you selected at 12? 713-780-3776. Cash it or trash it? What are the two hot takes, the two overreactions that each of us have? And we're going to try to sell to the other two. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.